sandwich.
Hope it's
not a sandwich.
Open it up so we can move on to the show. Everybody needs another Grocco. Go ahead, open it up, bro.
Come on, man. You put cheese in here?
Open it up. Grocco hates cheese. He absolutely hates cheese. He won't eat pizza. It's the only person on earth that doesn't eat pizza. So what we did is we got him a special custom-made shirt from T-Shirt Deli because he wears kid-size smalls and he calls them schmediums.
Wait, that wasn't even an extra small. You were supposed to... That's an extra
small. This is actually a medium, guys.
We got him something that he might actually wear.
Oh, he needs to get
schmedium
his shirts. His shirts are always size, extra size, small.
I appreciate that.
All right.
All right, well...
All right, well, let's get into it.
Thank you so much for entertaining our crazy celebration. Part two, happy birthday.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
So there's so much going on in the city. If you're not around, I mean, Saturday, it's a big day for us. I want to thank everybody who came out to the St. Jude's fundraiser at the Ritz. Thank you so much from the bottom of our heart. I know that you guys saw the video that we produced for CJ's family, which, by the way, amazing family. And CJ wasn't able, and his family weren't able to be at the Ritz, but because he had a cold or something.
Yeah.
But Saturday is the actual 5K race run. So if you don't want to run and you're like me, you can walk it. It's only 5K.
So
get the deets.
Yeah. Saturday morning, registration starts at 7 a.m. So if you guys want to still come out and register for the race, please be there at 7 a.m. The ceremony kicks off at 9, and at 9:30 we start the race. So looking forward to everybody coming out. People have been reaching out. I also want to thank everybody on social media that continues to donate to our cause, the Global Warriors for St. Jude. That was really cool of you guys to continue to do. I also want to give a shout out to Gibson's Italia for being the first business out there to help us put together this amazing event to benefit St. Jude. And Mode Body Boutique here in the West Loop over on Madison. They were amazing with our fitness challenge. Obviously, the Ritz topped it off this past Thursday. Thank you for everybody coming out and supporting. And we're looking forward to a great race, 5K this coming Saturday. So,
right. And so obviously the 5K is Saturday, but that shouldn't stop you from continuing to donate to this amazing organization. Remember, 100% of the proceeds go directly to the foundation, which then takes care of families and children, and obviously children who are suffering from cancer. So anyway, that was our little PSA. Today we're actually going to talk to someone who is also helping families. And I think this is a really cool topic because as investors, we're always looking for rental properties, right? And then obviously, how do we leverage those properties and make sure that there's zero vacancies? Because that's going to dictate the health of your investment. So today we brought one of the organizations that is, I believe, Chicago's most amazing organization that provides housing vouchers for families who need housing. And it allows, I think the best part of it is that it allows landlords to rent properties and basically get a paycheck directly to your bank account. So without further ado, Mr. Mamadi, would you like to do the intro, or is it Grocco?
I'll do the intro here. Today we have Katie Ludwig with CHA. It's going to talk about the owner's symposium, which is coming up in October. If you can tell us a little bit about that, Katie.
Sure. We are really excited. Thanks for having us here today. We are hosting this year. It's on Saturday, October 6th, here downtown at the Hyatt Regency. And this is our owner symposium. So this is the ninth year we've been doing this. And what we do is really a great learning event for anyone in the real estate industry. So we're talking about property managers, property owners, investors, anyone, you know, who's connected to the real estate industry should really come out. You can learn more about the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which, you know, most people know as Section 8. So you can learn more about that and how you can work with your properties through our program. But it's really just a great event to learn more about. We have topics not only about CHA and the HCV program, but we have topics about anything to do with the real estate industry. So Carla's going to be out there. She's doing a presentation on investment properties. We're having a session on estate planning. You know, so many of our own property owners out there today, they don't, you know, what happens to their properties after they, you know, pass on. And then we're having a really great discussion about perceptions of affordable housing, too. So we have lots of things that, you know, come out to learn more about the Housing Choice Voucher Program, but lots of other topics as well.
I just want to say one thing. I absolutely love the Chicago Housing Authority. I'm the only one in the room. Well, I don't know about you.
I do, too.
I'm the only one in the room that actually is a Section 8 landlord.
Great.
I was a Section 8 landlord.
Was.
I was.
I have.
So was I.
Seven or eight of them right now.
So anyway, let's not talk about you.
That is great to hear. We need more people like you to spread the word.
It's great. And I'll tell you what. One of the biggest pieces of mind you need when you're a landlord is knowing you're going to get the rent on time.
Yep.
And at 12:01 on the 1st, you get an email.
He's waiting by his computer.
I have been drinking at a nightclub, and I get boom.
You knocked it there.
And there it is, 12:01. Your payment is in. I'm like, yes, it is.
I can go and spend more money.
It is the most perfect tenant in the world, in all honesty.
Okay, so my opinion. Having said that, please, you don't have to wait till the owner's symposium. Obviously, you can register or inbox us, and we'll give you the information for the event. Obviously, I'll be speaking there, and also in collaboration with Grocco,
yes.
Who's going to be talking about financing. I will be covering how to market your properties and how to make sure that you have zero vacancies, because obviously, that affects your cap rate. But before we go on about the symposium, can you tell us a little bit about the organization and, you know, the mantra or the mission behind it?
You know, we are really excited. Again, we're excited for this event, but we serve 47,000 families through the voucher program every year. So that's 47,000 low-income families that, you know, otherwise might not have a place to live. So we're really proud of that. And what, you know, one of the things we really try to do through the program is we're all about, you know, we want to build stronger families, because we know stronger families lead to stronger communities. And at the end of the day, that makes us a stronger city. So at the end of the day, we are serving our families. Property owners, investors, real estate folks are key to this program because we depend on the market. We, you know, this isn't us, isn't the old CHA where we're owning the properties and managing them. We're depending on the market, you know, you guys, to really help us and be our partner in this. And that is, again, it's a great partnership, and we need the real estate community to support us, and they do, and so we appreciate that.
I guess some of the myths about the voucher program is that it's only in specific areas. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure, that is a myth. Thank you for bringing that up. We have voucher holders right now that live all across the city in every community area of the city. So, and we do have the ability in a lot of markets where we can meet that market rent. So just, you might think, oh, you know, my property is in Lincoln Park and it's, you know, the rent is so much higher there. We do have, in a lot of cases, we can support that rent level because we can go a little bit higher than we can in other places.
Awesome. How do I get a voucher to live in Lincoln Park?
And it is really because it's a goal of HUD's to really, you know, to be more inclusive in all parts of the city and to really...
diversification, I would think.
Right, exactly. So it is something that we have special authority from HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, to do that kind of a thing. So really, any of our voucher holders, if they're interested, you know, we have folks that live downtown in the Loop where, you know, rents are a little bit higher than
that. What is the name of that program? It's a specific program, right?
So it's, we call it our mobility program.
Okay.
That's absolutely, our voucher holders, again, live all over the city.
Now, if you're a landlord, and our show is traditionally more about purchasers more than being an actual tenant.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a landlord and you're going to consider using CHA as a tenant, what should be our expectations on how to qualify that property for it? One of the myths that I do know is that, oh, it's so hard to get approved. Mm-hmm. Before we go into the construction portion and what needs to be done, and I didn't find it hard at all, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I found it very reasonable. It wasn't like they came in asking for the moon and the stars to approve the properties. But what am I looking for if I'm going to be an investor buying a property, just so we can kind of build, reverse engineer the economics?
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that we're going to qualify going into a property for CHA?
So, great question. First, I'm going to say definitely we're going to go into a lot of detail, and we'll have sessions that talk all about that in a lot of detail at the symposium on October 6th. So, high level, I can say we really are looking at really things related when we come out and do an inspection. So we do an inspection of the property, as you know, before the family moves in. Mm-hmm. What we are really looking for are things related to the safety of the property. And so we are looking at... sort of safety. We always talk about safe, sanitary, and decent housing, right? So we're not looking like,
it's on granite countertops.
Right. We don't care. I mean, if they are, that's great, but we don't care if they're granite. Right. Like, we're more saying like, is there a, you know, does the hot water work? Can the unit maintain a heat level?
Right.
Are there trip hazards? You know, we do look a lot, and sometimes this can be an issue, but it's very important to us. We look at any chipped or deteriorated paint, yeah, because that can be an issue with lead-based paint, and if there are children, especially in the unit, so they're, you know, all the paint surfaces need to be, you know, not disturbed in any way.
So I don't freshly have to, painted. I don't have to over finish to improve the presentation to get to wow CHA.
Absolutely.
It just needs to be functional and safe.
That is correct.
And Kat, because correct. I like to change your name, I think I love Kat it. Is yes, a little bit sexier. You. Sorry, yes. You're not, you're just Nick. You're boring old Nick. But I think that a lot of the investors who, you know, typically go ahead and rent out properties to market tenants feel, I'm going to get this property ready, market the property, and I don't have to deal with the nuisance of having an inspection initially, and then also waiting for the voucher, you know, filling out the forms. Because first of all, you're going to fill out the form, make sure that you have a voucher for the right amount of bedrooms, right? Amount of number of bedrooms. Correct. And then they're going to come out and they're going to inspect the property initially. And so you pass the inspection. Depending on the condition of the property, you're going to get A, B, or C grading. And that's also going to determine the amount of rent that you can yield from that specific tenant or voucher recipient. But then you also have to do an additional inspection within 6 months later. So as a realtor, I find that I get a lot of people or investors who are like, I don't want to deal with that. What do you say to them about that?
So I will say one thing we recently changed in the program is that we used to have to come out and do an inspection every year. And we recently changed that because we were hearing a lot of feedback. And so now we only do inspections. We do that initial inspection, just like you described, and then we only come out every 2 years.
Awesome.
If you have a That's good... Now, the one caveat is if you have those children, if you have children under six in your unit because of those lead-based paint concerns, we still will come out every year. But otherwise, we're only coming out every 2 years. So we are hearing from folks, and we really are trying to make the program more user-friendly, if you will.
That's amazing, because I think that was kind of like the feedback. And I did get a survey from your organization asking us as, professionals, industry professionals, what is the feedback? What are people, what are the negatives about the program? And I think that, listen, if you haven't given CHA a try or vouchers and you don't want to deal with this, like Nick said, is one of the most amazing programs because you are helping families. And these families are, they hold the voucher for a lifetime, per se, in some cases. So there's a lot of guidelines and restrictions that they have to follow in order to make sure that they maintain that voucher. So they're going to be very respectful of your property. And again, it's all about educating that tenant, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. And we have lots of workshops that are for our tenants too. So we have all throughout the year, right? We do this symposium once a year, but we also have workshops on a monthly basis, both for our tenants and for the property owners.
What another myth or fact, do you have to, if a tenant has a voucher, and it's worth, let's say, $1,000, but the property is being rented for, or asking price is $1,200. And I've heard this go back and forth among so many people. Must it rent only at $1,000, or can the tenant pay the difference? Because there's a lot of people have that question, like, you can't pay the difference.
So it depends a little bit. It gets a little technical. It depends a little bit. But generally speaking, as long as our... we run a rent analysis before the family moves in, and as long as the comps in that area, and we try to stay within a half mile to a mile radius of that property, as long as the comps are supporting that $1,200 that you're asking for, we, in a lot of cases, will be able to approve that.
Okay, so, but if they're not, and this is just a greedy landlord trying to get some ridiculous number,
exactly.
You
sometimes
won't approve it.
That happens.
That makes sense. Okay.
Right.
Katie, we're running short a little bit on time here, so if you can... recap.
Sure. Again, we are just
please.
Really excited. We want as many people as possible to register and come to our symposium. Again, it's free. It's Saturday, October 6th at the Hyatt Regency. There's going to be discounted parking. We're going to have lunch for everyone. So it is a great opportunity. Really, you can come out and learn not just about the Housing Choice Voucher Program, but really get a lot of education just on real estate in general. So thanks.
Yeah, one of the cool things about the symposium is that, you know, there's changes to the CHA, and we're going to be there. Grocco and I are going to be there teaching how to market your property and leverage the property so that you don't have vacancies. And we're going to teach you how to take photos, how to market the properties, where to market the properties, where to find tenants. And obviously, this is free of charge. So we're literally teaching you how to market properties. Realtors will sometimes charge you 1 month's rent. And also, a property manager will charge you, I don't know, a percentage of your rental income on a monthly basis for you to manage these properties. And we're going to teach you the ins and outs of property management. management as well as marketing. So I think it's imperative for you to show up and come out and support and learn a little bit more about this. Also, I understand that there's videos that they have available so you can learn about the inspection process. So lots of resources. And again, I mean, this is a great win-win for anybody who's looking to become a landlord and own property and manage tenants.
And I want to thank Katie Ludwig for coming from CHA. These two for sure are going to be at the event. I might swing through just to harass them.
Please
and
do.
Ask my own questions. Because like I said, I am a Section 8
recipient.
Tenant. Or not tenant.
How can we get Nick on that list?
Thanks again.
Yeah, I think you got calls coming in, Carla. Do you even pay attention to all the calls that are coming in?
No, that's your job.
No, it is not my job.
Wait, is it all the millions of fans for Grocco because I'm over his birthday?
No, we were giving away free
all the free
stuff.
the selfie sticks. So again, it's not Grocco that they're looking for. It's a giveaway.
Give me a selfie stick. Give me
this is how Grocco gets people to like him, by buying them stuff. I'm still waiting for the official gifts. So how many we have? Are we going to take calls?
Well,
or what
there's
are we
a
doing?
Call. Yeah, you tell me. There's a call sitting online too.
Do you want to take it?
Why don't we wait for that call? Why don't we wait for that call and introduce our next guest because we got to keep the show rolling.
Speaking. Oh, yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes, sir, Mr. Funes. Thank you for contributing. You want to introduce our next guest?
I just gave you
the cue.
Info, yeah.
All right. Well, I don't want to misspell or mispronounce your last name, but in from Howard & Howard, attorney at law, Leo
Aubel.
Aubel. Thank you, sir.
Well done.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in the industry, and how long you've been a lawyer
for. Well, I've been in the industry since I was 16 years old because my mother was a realtor on the North Shore, and so nice. I was, sitting open houses and planting signs and stayed with that. And then I've been a real estate attorney now for 32 years.
Look at you. Congrats. Shout out to Mom. What's Mom doing now?
Talk about it. I like it.
She passed away just last year.
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You. But
sorry
she was, she managed a bunch of realtors and worked in many offices and had a very successful career. My father was also an attorney, and he dabbled in a little bit in real estate. So it just seemed like a natural fit for me, and I've taken to it like a duck to water.
I respect that.
Kind of like so your annoying. Stories.
That is exactly
it always goes
story.
Back to
it's exactly the same story. My parents have been in real estate for
Carla
plus years.
I think that's
I
true.
15,
a lot of people in
I was
real estate.
15, listening to all the problems that were going on, and eventually, mm-hmm. when I turned 20, I migrated into mortgage.
Well, you overhear those same conversations, story. And you learn how they're dealing with clients, and how they're dealing with landlords, and how they're dealing with tenants, and it just seems like.
And tell me,
a
the first
thing.
Day you actually started doing it for yourself, you felt like you already knew everything.
Wow.
I mean, compared to most green people, you knew a lot of stuff.
Honestly, when I started, I started writing securities offerings, so people who were raising money to do real estate investments. So I was dealing with the investors and the promoters and the developers, and then I thought, I can close these transactions too. And so I just started closing them, and really the closings and the transactional work is really where I've been focusing for a long time now.
So what's Leo's hot topic? Do we have one specifically? Or are we just going to drill him with a million own questions like we do every attorney? Because
well, like every client who calls me every day.
Yes,
exactly. Why not?
It goes around, comes around, man.
No, well, he does a lot. I mean, we're talking about tenants, right, and CHA. So I thought it'd be important because I know you manage buildings and you do condominium laws. You're just tell us a little bit about the kind of business and the clients that you service.
Well, the type of client I'm servicing more and more are the landlords because my condo developers have sort of stopped that work. The more popular thing now is doing these apartment buildings, and that's really where the money is these days, at least in Chicago. And we're seeing a lot more units coming on market. And they were talking about how we've reached the saturation point. But I was reading in Cranes today that no, we really haven't. And as buildings are coming online, more and more tenants are coming downtown. So the demographic is switching to a younger and younger demographic, and they're looking to rent as opposed to buy. And so we're talking to landlords specifically about the Chicago Landlord Tenant Ordinance and how difficult it is to comply with the security deposit requirements, and maybe why not to take a security deposit any longer.
Move-in fees now. Right. Application. Was
move-in fee, move-out fee, right. Yeah, there's limits to that, of course, too, but where a lot of landlords are learning the ropes that way. Right. We're working with developers primarily on location and demographic and that sort of thing, and sort of trying to press the boundaries of some neighborhoods. We're seeing a lot more developers now interested in the uptown area, not the immediate west side, which seems to have also already reached a peak even, but even further along the West Corridor, along the green and pink and blue lines. And then we're seeing more activity in neighborhoods like McKinley Park and south that way and the Holman Square area.
Look at you giving it all away. I mean, this is really good information because if you're an investor out there, these are neighborhoods that you should watch out for.
Well, I like to drive by the properties that my clients are interested in, and I can just – it's taking me longer and longer to get there. So
you're
it's
a bit more
north,
passionate than the other
west,
person
further
who
southwest,
had.
Further south even, and we're seeing great strides in property values, especially.
So you have a lot of
larger scale clients, like you said, they do buildings with like 100 or 200, 300 units. But our show is predominantly one time or second, third property landlords. You said something that I wanted to touch on because it's pretty recent. Chicago, security deposits. Why has it gotten so loaded with red tapes where it's in favor, or it's not in favor for a landlord to collect a security deposit anymore? It's actually rather scary. And what do you think the future of that legislation is? Do you think it will ever change back? Because it's becoming ridiculous. Like, if you don't have it in a separate account, collecting interest, mm-hmm. I mean, it could be like mm-hmm. you just lose this whole argument.
Well, landlords are a very, very diverse group, and there's not really like a trade association that represents landlords. Landlords have always been sort of the devil as opposed to the angel. And so I don't see it changing anytime soon, certainly not in my lifetime. And the hazards are many. You have to state on the face of the lease or in a separate letter exactly the bank and the address at which you're holding the security deposit.
Oh,
you have to pay that interest every 12 months, regardless of whether the lease is 12 months or not.
Right.
There's many other restrictions, and the courts very much enforce these regulations. In fact, there's attorneys who specialize in doing nothing but pursuing landlords for violations of the landlord-tenant ordinance, and the penalties are draconian. It's 2 months of the security deposit, plus the security deposit, plus their fees, plus the attorney's fees.
Yeah.
So a tenant can come out way ahead, even if the landlord has made a very minor error, and we're talking about 5 cents or 10 cents.
Sure.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Which is scary. So what's your advice to, like,
our advice to all of our residential landlords, anyway, is just don't take the security deposit. We're now advising a move-in fee, $300 or $400. That will generally cover most damage. I would much rather pursue the tenant in court for damage after the lease has ended rather than defending a security deposit violation case because I'm going to lose.
I think that's some of the most important info we've ever given.
Is there a max, though, on a move-in fee? Is there a max amount?
No.
I don't think so.
There is no specific.
There's no specific amount. You're right, but I we're recommending to our landlords no more than $500.
I was doing like 50% of the rent.
Great information. And we have here, because he's not just learned this information from your parents or growing up in the business, but I got here from our producers there. You have memberships with the Illinois State Bar Association, obviously Chicago Bar Association, American Bar Association, American Mensa Organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, wow, look at that. How many other acronyms do you have next to your name, Nick?
Those Why are you picking at me?
Oh, Grocco, birthday 40-year-old
He's got
boy.
VIP, I think.
Oh, look at that. Everybody falls in love with Nick at some point.
I got VIP, CEO, and F-U, Carla.
And what's great about these organizations is we're trying to affect legislation to make development easier for our clientele. One of the things that's happened recently as a result of pushes by these legal organizations is that 10% threshold for ownership within a condo building. So previously, until June of this year, one owner could not own more than 10% of the units in a condo development. Otherwise, it wasn't warrantable, meaning it's difficult to finance if you're coming in as a purchaser. That changed now to 50%. And that's made a very big deal because a lot of developers like to hang on to some units in the developments that they're doing, especially at my level, which is the 12 or 24 unit building. That's sort of my sweet spot. And so they'll want to hang on to some units for rental as opposed to sale. Now they can effectively hang on to a much larger percentage, and you can finance units earlier in the development process.
So
for incoming buyers, it's really a very important thing. And for both developers and incoming buyers, it's made a lot of units more accessible earlier in the development process.
It used to be a nightmare financing somebody when, you know, you talk about like a 12 unit, and the developer still owns four of them.
Right.
And you're like, or three of them, or even two of them. Because it was over 10%. We're stuck.
Well, this is really good information for people who are condo owners and have been stuck in properties. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the situation with Mike. Remember, I told you to look into that because they've been trying to sell their condo for a very long time, but they just can't. So as a seller, you feel stuck, right? Because a buyer or borrower is not going to spend money or pay higher because the loan is unwarrantable. Is it unwarrantable or non-warrantable?
Non-warrantable.
Unwarrantable.
Non-warrantable. Corrected herself with the wrong answer again.
Non-warrantable. So if it's non-warrantable, they have to pay higher interest rates?
Yeah, those programs
bigger down
and then a higher down payment.
Yeah.
So a buyer,
if you can qualify at all.
If they can qualify, if the building. So can you give me the guidelines for qualifying a non-warrantable, whatever?
Well, it's just like you just mentioned. There's a new guideline that Fannie Mae is introducing where now you can have a 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to allow us on the financing side to be able to do these high rises a lot more easier to touch on your client. We found a solution for him. I told him, let's just get your building FHA approved. You get the FHA approval and that building's going to sell out, because right now nobody can sell in that building. You're talking about 200 plus units.
Which isn't the easiest thing to do, but it does help.
But at least try. Everybody was on board. The board was on board to do it. Yeah, of course. So
how do you get a building FHA approved?
You got to go through the FHA approval process, and you submit your documents, and the condo needs to just get approved. And it usually takes about, and at least in the past, it used to take 3 to 4 months.
Right, and as you were saying with the Section 8, it's not as difficult as people think. And in fact, there's services that will do it for you for a relatively small fee, and so you just hire a consultant and you know, get it done.
Can I tell you, too, it's pretty easy, to be honest, this is a personal story. I mean, my first building was, I opened up with owning a two-flat and had Section 8 because at that time it was Section 8, now it's CHA, I know.
It's still Section 8.
Well, whatever. So, it was easier, and they literally walk you through the process. They have trainings to teach you how to market the property, how to do the inspections. They're the most easiest to manage kind of tenants. So I think it's really great. But once you get into like the red tape, you get into problems, because it goes both ways. Sometimes landlords will take advantage of the guidelines, and sometimes tenants will take advantage of the guidelines. What do you find? But do you find it that for investors, it's really hard if you break any of the landlord tenant ordinance? What is it? Ordinance summary? It's a landlord-tenant ordinance summary. It's like a summary people should read and know about before they become landlords so they can know more about the process.
There is that. There's still a lot of misinformation out there. Like, I get condo owners who say, well, I don't have to comply with it because it's a condo and it's not an apartment. I'm saying, no, you still have to. If you don't live there with this tenant, you still have to comply. I just find that people think that I've got a cool tenant and I'm a cool guy, and so we'll work stuff out. And much to their chagrin, they find out they're getting sued even after the lease is over because, you know, these attorneys are advertising even on the internet about, you know, recovering two times the amount of your security deposit. And
I was going to ask that.
And so,
free money.
Yeah, it gets tricky. You know, but I will find that at the higher end, I do find that, you know, the tenants who are paying $5,000 and $6,000 and $7,000 a month, you know, those are the ones we don't really have the problem with.
Right.
And so for my higher end residential, which is mostly where my market is, you know, I'm finding that the size of units and the dollar amounts that units are renting for in Chicago anymore are getting higher and higher. I'm not surprised anymore to see $10,000 and $12,000 monthly rentals. It's amazing. Some of these larger buildings, especially, just where this market is pushing itself.
Right, and it's important for people to know their rules, right? So you said if somebody doesn't get a receipt for security deposit at signing of a lease, if the lease doesn't indicate where the money is being held, what bank?
Exactly, not just what bank, what address?
What's the address?
The address of the branch.
Can you give us more of those? The little four things.
You have to attach a summary of the landlord tenant ordinance to the lease. You have to have all of the disclosures, so the lead based paint disclosure and the mold disclosure. So any more residential lease in Chicago is going to run 30 or 35 pages because you've got not only the lease, but then all these disclosures to attach to it. And I find that most landlords, especially if they're not attorneys or haven't done it before, they're just not passing muster, and it's a shame.
It sounds very overwhelming. Where can somebody get a hold of you if they just want to run ideas or maybe hire you so that they do things the right way? And I always tell my landlords, if you do your homework in the front end and you learn the process, then you're going to save yourself a lot of headaches. Even for clients that bought properties and maybe had a change in lifestyle, you know, they decided to relocate to the burbs, or they got married and they're leaving their condo in the city, and now all of a sudden they become landlords and they're like, oh, it's fine, you know, my girlfriend's going to move in there, and it turns out a year later they want to sell their property and the girlfriend is not amicable to us showing it, and now the fighting starts, and it's never a good thing. So I say, even with your best friend, make sure you sign a lease. So where can they get a hold of you for information?
Well, we're online, howardandhoward.com, and my name is on there, Leo Aubel, and they can scroll down. You'll see the numbers of real estate attorneys in our law firm that do this work on a regular basis. And we play both sides of the street. We represent the tenants. We also represent the landlords and the developers. And we're very familiar with this information. There's also a lot of information available on cityofchicago.org. I got to admit, these stuff that's about landlords and landlord training is very, very good online. The city also, in addition to CHA, the city also provides seminars on a regular basis. It's monthly, as far as I know. And so people can get this information. But the compliance part, it's tough. You got to send notices. You got to send them in the right way, by the correct method, to the right address. You know, unless you have a landlord's attorney guiding you, there's still a lot of misinformation out there, even among other attorneys who are just going off of knowledge that they earned, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, and it's just no longer relevant. You got to stay up.
One of the key advice that you gave was that if you're not in the building, then you have to follow the rules. So say you have a two-flat, you live in one of the buildings, so maybe you can get away with some of the guidelines, but we always say don't try to get away with anything. Just follow everything, because then you become, you know, you'll follow protocol. But for anybody, because you mentioned 12-unit buildings or 20 units, as we're seeing, you know, the trend of becoming landlords at a higher scale. Do you work with buyers who are looking to, like, deconvert condos and turning them into rentals? Or what's your forte?
Well, we're doing more and more deconversion work now. So it used to be just the 6-unit or the 12-unit building that was considering deconverting to an apartment. Now we're seeing much larger buildings. I've been reading recently about buildings on the former Edgewater Hotel, the pink building up on North Sheridan. They just voted to go apartments now. And couple other buildings on Lakeshore Drive. So we're seeing more and more of that deconversion work. And that's tough because you've got to get more than 75% of the unit owners to vote on and approve a contract purchase package. We're also seeing deconversions from cooperatives to condominiums, which is a very interesting process. And so, you know, got to follow the rules, got to follow them very closely. There are a lot of tricks and traps for the unwary and notices and that sort of thing. So I will say that anybody who's considering any kind of real estate transaction ought to consult with an attorney. And I'm not just blowing my own horn here because I'm trying to earn an income. I will just say that the rules have become more complex. The market is more complex. The dollar amounts are higher. There's more at risk. You know, hire a lawyer. And for most transactions, as y'all well know, the amount of money you're paying an attorney is chump change compared to the purchase prices. And I see people entering in these million-dollar deals and, you know, not wanting to pay $600 or $700 to an attorney. To me, that's folly.
Right. No, and it gets really complicated. I completely agree. I mean, I was looking at a project in Lakeview where three of the units, you know, there are three separate owners and it's a condo association. And, you know, people are giving you advice. There were other realtors that were giving advice and the sellers or the owners just don't know what to do with that project. But it is imperative that you contact a professional that's going to walk you through the legal side of everything. Because, I mean, even Grocco and I were trying to figure out what happens once we, you know, the property gets deconverted. Like, how are you going to sell it? How are you going to market? So there's, you know, you got to look at the big picture and it's a big puzzle. So I agree with you. They should call a professional and attorneys are, you're the glue of the transaction because there's things that we may not know that you're going to be able to see and then protect the client from it.
Right. And I'm trying to stay up on the current regulations. I read a lot of FHA regulations, the regulations that are coming down from HUD, which are changing on an almost daily basis these days. And, you know, as the economy improves and certainly the current administration is trying to assist in the real estate market improving, generally speaking. And so we're seeing a lot more regulations coming from all sorts of government agencies that are affecting real estate transactions and real estate investment in particular. One thing that we're concerned about is now we know that because of the new tax laws that real estate taxes over $10,000 can no longer be deducted, whereas previously it was a 100% deduction. And this is taking a lot of people by surprise, especially in what the administration calls high tax states, which are actually just high value states. Properties in New York and California, for example, that routinely have tax bills in excess of $10,000. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised when they file their taxes next year and learn that they can't deduct as much of those taxes as they were
more than
able
just that.
To do so.
Meals and entertainment, corporate promotions, a lot of these things are changing in the tax law.
Right. So you've just got to have an attorney that you can trust who's staying up on top of this stuff.
It's important because obviously that affects your yield, right? If we're looking at promoting to become a landlord and rent properties and optimize your rental yield. And here we're talking about like taxes and how that's going to, you know, mess up your whole income or yield that you're so used to because everything has gone up.
Right. And so we're encouraging our landlords not to own properties in their own name any longer because they're not going to get the bang for the buck they used to be getting from some of these deductions and to instead form limited liability companies or corporations, whatever appropriate for them, so that they can, you know, maximize their tax benefits. Because a lot of people think, oh, I'm just renting out that condo I bought as a kid now that I'm moving to the suburbs. It's not as simple as it once was, and you need some professional advice. And I know at Howard & Howard and, of course, many other law firms, we are constantly providing information to our clients, but we're also taking our own seminars within these bar association groups and all sorts of continuing legal education just to stay on top of it. It's a constantly changing industry.
And Leo, do you guys do tax
appeals?
You know, we don't. That's a very much a specialty area, and there are attorneys to whom I refer that business, and they are experts in that field. That's a whole nother ball of wax in terms of knowledge base and contacts, and so try to find somebody who really does that work on a regular professional basis.
But it's important that you mention that you should look at your entire portfolio, right, and kind of analyze how you're going to hold that asset, what makes more sense for you, and the tax implication. You don't necessarily have to work with tax appeals, but you could definitely guide them and let them know who they can call to get that done, and if they need to do it.
No question. And I just need even just to point out to my clients that, gee, this was a reassessment year. 2018 was a reassessment year for real estate taxes for every property within the city of Chicago, and we were seeing increases in assessed value in certain neighborhoods, Rogers Park, 40% or more increases in assessed value. That doesn't necessarily mean a 40% increase in your tax bill, but it does mean your tax bill is going up. They've just recently come out in Lakeview and in West Chicago townships, and we're going to see some more of those coming out later this year. And so, especially in the reassessment years, which is every 3 years, everybody should be looking at their real estate taxes, and not just investors, just residential property owners. When you're seeing those kinds of jumps, real estate taxes, you got to get on the ball.
Because they're going up.
Good stuff.
And that's why Rahm decided not to run for mayor. He don't want to take the heat for it.
I think he wants to enjoy the rest of his life.
Well, I think he's got kids in college, and he needs to afford that somehow.
I'm just joking.
Good stuff.
I don't know why he's quitting. I'm just teasing it. You know?
Say what you want about Rahm. I think he was instrumental in bringing in many corporations, which generated more real estate deals for all of us in the market.
Brought the NFL in. I just liked seeing the draft here. That was cool. Finally got something cool.
Just the number of new employees at these major firms, you know.
Yeah.
Google and Archer's Daniel Midland.
We don't do politics, though, right? Yeah. Not doing politics. We're doing real estate.
I can't still figure out what this guy goes for. I don't even know.
I'm an independent.
Well, this is good stuff. Let's wrap this amazing show up.
Yes, Rockwood, do you have anything to contribute on your birthday?
Yeah, it's your birthday, bro. We're going to let you close this out since it's your birthday.
let's do that.
Let this man right here.
Okay.
Right. Here comes a strong closing. Don't forget our guests, please.
Don't make me close.
Come on.
I want to see how he does this.
Let's do it.
Thank you for watching another segment of Market Overdrive. I appreciate everybody watching us today on my milestone 40th birthday. We want to thank Katie Ludwig of CHA for coming out and talking about the owner's symposium, which is October 6th. We'll see you guys out there. Leo Abel of Howard & Howard. Appreciate you coming out and talking law, real estate law. Reach out to Leo from Howard & Howard. Our sponsors. Do we have any sponsors? Are we still?
We have a lot of sponsors.
Keeping the lights on?
We're not listing all our sponsors today. We don't do it like that. Where to follow us?
Make sure you follow us on all of our social media channels. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube.
Grackle's personal account.
My personal account, marketoverdrive.com. And we'll see you guys next week, Thursday. I think we're on again next week, Thursday. We have a special guest coming on. I just don't know who it is.
Well, it must
be special. Happy birthday, Grom. Thank you guys for watching, and catch us later. And of course, remember, you can share this information. Please reach out to anybody and come and see us this Saturday and also at the CHA symposium. The information is going to be on our page. Ciao.
Bye, guys.